The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Alcantara, Soroka, you look so good in Boca. Peralta, Manoa, Mouse back for Aaron Nola. Giolito, Castillo, Yoshida, Mosu, Sinto, Happy Cocomo Friday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on April 15th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White here to break down all of Thursday's action. We had a historic offensive performance, a bunch of stinky pitchers that we'll get to pretty early on, plus we'll get you ready for week three. Big win for my Yanks. You know what that means.
Oh my goodness gracious.
How are we doing, Scotty?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm doing just fine.
I wanted to make sure you spoke before I got to my oh my goodness gracious player, because it would have just been me talking for like the first 5 minutes and that would have been weird. So
I've had a lot to say already. Yeah, doing good.
All right. So let's get into my oh my goodness gracious player. And I'm going to stick with the theme here. The Yankees, Luis Severino, vintage Severino in this performance against the Toronto Blue Jays. 5 shutout innings, 2 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes on 83 pitches. That's an 18% swinging strike rate. 6 of those came on the changeup, 5 on the cutter. And that new cutter, Scott, I know we mentioned it recently and kind of worried that he wasn't throwing his slider because it used to be one of his best pitches. He used his cutter 23% of the time, and the results on that pitch were tremendous. 71% whiff rate, 53% CSW. That's called strikes plus whiffs. Just awesome. His velocity was back up, same point to where it was at back in 2018. Scott, just like that, flip on a dime. I thought he looked amazing in the start.
He did. No, he looked good, and some of those new pitches looked good. They were very effective. I kind of dispute the vintage Severino claim, because it's not just the slider was one of his most effective pitches before Tommy John surgery. It was the breadwinner. It was, okay, maybe he'll develop a changeup someday, but this slider's so good that it may not matter. It was one of those types of pitches. And, you know, sliders are notoriously put a strain on the elbow. So you could understand how he might want to lay off that pitch. He might want to develop some new ones. And at least in this start here against a very good Blue Jays lineup, it looked like it could be a successful formula for Luis Severino. But we don't really know. Like, if he's changed his pitch mix that much, we don't really know what we're dealing with here. And that scares me. I'm encouraged if I have Severino, more encouraged than after his first start. But I think it's I think there's still a lot we need to discover. It's basically a different pitcher now than the one we saw when he last pitched significantly, which was like, what, 2018? It was a long time ago.
Yeah. Yep. And the velocity that I mentioned, I mean, that was something that was really encouraging. That fastball velocity was the same as it was back in 2018. I guess my retort to your retort, Scott, would be, what if the cutter just kind of takes the place of the slider? I mean, just for tonight, it was basically as good as we've seen the slider in the past. And I kind of agree with your assessment where the slider does put a lot of strain on the elbow. I was going to present that as a conspiracy theory that he's using this cutter so that there's not as much strain on his elbow. So I agree with you.
Oh, no, I think that's why else would he stop throwing his best pitch? I think that's it's not a conspiracy theory. I think it's just a logical theory,
right?
You know,
this cutter, by the way, Scott, I mean, it's like nasty. 91 miles per hour. I saw it maxed out at 95. I forgot who he struck out, but like there was one strikeout with this cutter that was really, really nasty. So I agree. He's a new pitcher. I don't want to like overreact to this, but maybe the cutter just kind of slots in for the slider for Severino.
Yeah, no, it totally could. And like I said, this start is a good early sign, but it's just one start. And again, it just like I feel like I need more data on this pitcher who only faintly resembles the previous Severino before I can have a lot of confidence in him. But yeah, I mean, if this was just a no-name who did this tonight, like if this was Tyler McGill at the start of the season just turning in this start Severino just did, it'd be like, okay, let's get excited. But I'm comparing it to this previous standard of Severino, which was, you know, top 10 type pitcher in fantasy. And I still don't know if he's quite capable of that, as encouraging as this start was.
Yeah, this is legitimately his best start in 4 years. I mean, I guess it would be like 3.5 years, but yeah, it's a good sign. And he is at Detroit next week, Scott. Would you be okay starting Severino in that spot?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, cool. Oh my goodness gracious player for you, Scotty. Who you got?
So I'm going to say Shohei Ohtani, who, wow, what a difference a turn makes. Because last time on opening day, he looked so overpowering against the Astros, right? The best team in the best lineup in baseball last year. And he went against Texas this time. And the results were very different. 6 earned runs in 3 2/3 innings. And specifically, you know, those Astros couldn't do anything off Ohtani, but Jonah Heim, the Rangers backup catcher, just murdered him. He hit a grand slam off Ohtani, went 3 for 4 on the day. It was a bad start, but you know what? The velocity that we were raving about after that first start, it was still way up from a year ago. The spin rates were still great on all of his pitches. Like it's not a question of stuff for Ohtani. I don't really read much into this performance from him. You know, we've seen a lot of really good pitchers have bad outings the first time through, and a lot with clearer warning signs than I'd say Ohtani showed here. So probably just write it off as a bad one. Go get him next time. And Jonah Heim, of course, we're not going to hear much from him this season because the Rangers have Mitch Garver. So it's noteworthy, but I don't really think it's actionable in any way in fantasy.
All right. Are you comfortable if you have just Ohtani, the pitcher, using him next week at Houston? I know he was good against them on opening day, but yeah. All right.
Yeah, I'm comfortable Ohtani, the pitcher, using him against anybody.
Like, okay.
Unless he has like two more starts in a row like this, then I'd start to question it, but I doubt that's going to happen.
Scott, do you have any concerns with Ohtani, the hitter, thus far? He is 5 for 29 with 10 strikeouts to one walk, a 34.5% strikeout rate as a hitter to start the season.
There were some doubts he could live up to last year's numbers. And he had his batting average took a drop quite a bit in the second half. So to a degree, yes. I mean, I feel a little less confident he's going to return first round value, but like, am I so worried about Ohtani that I'm benching him in fantasy? No.
No.
And I think it's important. You know, we stress this every year. I'm not sure we've gone far enough stressing it this year. And you know, you don't like to keep hammering it home because it just, you know, it just sounds redundant. It sounds like a cop-out. But like, it's important to remind everyone, including myself, the season's a week old.
Right.
Like it feels like it's been going on a lot longer than that. It's been a week. A week ago was the opening day podcast. And so almost nothing means anything at this point. And I say I have to remind myself because I'm furiously refreshing all my scoreboard pages on my rotisserie leagues or really any league and just, you know, begging me to move up in the standings. And it's just like, what's happened so far is a drop in the bucket. And like, if this was a week in the middle of July, nothing anybody did would be getting any kind of reaction from us. You know, like if it was just an isolated week, not, you know, not obviously like 3 weeks leading up to it or whatever. So yeah, it's just, it's important to keep that in mind.
No, I think it's a good reminder for everyone, Scott. I mean, there is a human element, obviously, to this game. There's a lot of psychology that comes with playing fantasy and stuff, and, you know, not overreacting and trying to overcome biases. And there's a lot going on. And I have to remind myself, too, I had the ultimate gut punch earlier on Thursday, and I'll get to it in just a little bit. But it felt like the sky was falling. It was like one thing after another. But before we get to that, got to give a shout out to Manny Machado with a game for the ages here. 5 for 5 with a home run and 2 steals. That's a sock and 2 shoes. That's one stinky foot. Scott, were you someone who ever, did you ever wear sneakers without socks? Because I always thought that was so weird.
Does anybody do that?
I knew some people growing up that, I mean, maybe you don't do it all the time, but you're in a rush. You're just like, I'm going to throw my sneakers on with no socks.
Like if I'm going out to check the mail or something, maybe. Right. But, you know, no, not as, you know, for a while, I wondered, you know, I'd look around, you know, particularly like middle school age, you know, that really difficult period where you feel like it's impossible to live up to your peers at anything. And you look around at other people's feet and it looked like they weren't wearing socks. But then I came to discover there's such a thing as ankle socks, you know, like that just are completely hidden by the shoe. And it's not that they weren't wearing socks. So, you know, I'm not sure I've encountered that somebody legitimately consistently not wearing socks in their sneakers.
Don't do that. It's gross. Anyway, Machado, awesome game. 5 for 5, a home run and 2 steals, 18 fantasy points on CBS. That's basically a quality start for a pitcher. So shout out to him. And per Jeremy Frank at MLB Random Stats on Twitter, encourage everyone to follow him there. Machado is just the 5th player since 1901 with 5 hits, 4 runs scored, 2 steals, and a home run in the same game. That's how historic this performance was. Just an absolute breakout for Manny Machado. You love to see it. And I wanted to give a shout out to some other Padres who had big games as well, Scott. Eric Hosmer, 4 for 5 with a double, 2 RBI. Not hitting for much power early on, but he's hitting. 12 hits, he's batting .462, 25% rostered. I was kind of interested, Scott, you know, maybe in some deeper leagues. I picked him up in a 15-team roto league last week, using him as my corner infielder. But I saw that he has 4 lefties on the schedule next week, so that kind of dampens any excitement for Eric Hosmer.
I don't think you should have much anyway. You know? Like the issue with Eric Hosmer has always been he doesn't elevate enough, and there's like he's still not. You know, early this season, even though he's been getting some hits, he's still not elevating enough to deliver the kind of power we need from a first baseman. So, again, it's 1 week, and I don't think he's going to continue getting a bunch of ground ball hits at this rate, you know? Mm-hmm. Occasional line drive hits, too, I understand. But the point is, not enough power in the long run for you to want to start him at first base.
Do you have his StatCast page pulled up?
Not at the moment. I was looking at it earlier tonight.
Would you like to guess his launch angle entering tonight's game?
I think it was negative.
Negative 0.1 yeah. For Eric Hosmer. So that's a lot of ground balls. I agree with you. It's probably not going to last. He is hitting the ball very hard. So obviously that helps these balls find a few holes. But
And even if he had like a 12-degree launch angle, you know, something good, it would be the best on record for him, frankly. It would still only be a week of him doing that. So I would still be highly skeptical of it. But at least there would be a better justification for having enthusiasm for Hosmer.
Yeah. The other Padre I wanted to give a shout out to, CJ Abrams, 1 for 5 with his first career home run. Came off of our guy Charlie Morton, unfortunately. But yeah, gets a homer in the books before his first steal. I saw you tweeting about that, Scott. We didn't expect it, but hey, here we are. And speaking of Abrams and Charlie Morton, Scott, have you had one of these gut punch days in fantasy baseball yet? I know we're only a week in, but have you had any?
What do you mean by that? Just an awful day?
Yeah, just like everything that can go wrong did go wrong.
What pitchers would you guess I'm most invested in? What starting pitchers, Frank?
Well, then I would say that you just had the same day as I did because Adam Wainwright and Charlie Morton, they were not good in my main event league, which is my most important league, NFBC. It's huge buy-in, frankly. And I started Adam Wainwright, Kyle Gibson, and Charlie Morton. That came out to an 8.36 ERA on the day, and it was just brutal. I also wanted to ask you, are you superstitious at all? Because a lot of people say, like, don't watch your pitchers pitch in fantasy. I watched all three pitchers pitch, and each one just got rocked, and I'm just left my head in my hands. What am I doing? Why do I play fantasy sports? I am so bad at this.
Not only am I not superstitious, I am, I don't even know what the word, like, anti-superstitious. If you tell me not to do something for superstitious reasons, I will do it just to prove you wrong.
I don't know what the opposite is. I thought it would just be stitious, but that doesn't sound right either. Anyway, between these three pitchers, got Adam Wainwright. He gave up 4 earned runs over 4 1/3. Kyle Gibson, I mean, he's obviously not in the same category as these guys. 4 earned runs over 4 2/3. He did have 17 swinging strikes in the start. And then our guy, Charlie Morton, 5 earned runs over 5 innings pitched. Anything that you saw notable from those three performances?
The pitchers?
Yes.
Wainwright, Gibson, and Morton? No, I mean, obviously Gibson is the one we have the least confidence in. He had a great first outing. But I don't know that anybody was expecting him to have a career season based on that. Interestingly enough, at the Marlins today, he had 17 swinging strikes on 91 pitches. And in the past, he's had some pretty good swinging strike seasons, as Kyle Gibson, but not so much last season. And I don't know. I don't think there's a real takeaway yet, but the 17 whiffs did catch my attention.
All right. For Kyle Gibson, he had 17 swinging strikes in this start, 16 swinging strikes in his first start. I would hold him in deeper leagues, you know, in 12 teamers. If someone like Mackenzie Gore or Merrill Kelly is available, I would drop Kyle Gibson for one of those guys. But I would hold him in deeper leagues. Do not start him next week. He's at the Colorado Rockies. Obviously, we just want nothing to do with that. Scott, before we get to your week 3 sleepers, we'll hit that early on here. Quick thoughts on the Mariners youngsters, because they had, well, Jared Kelnick had a huge game. Julio Rodriguez was okay. Kelnick, a sock and a shoe of his own, a home run, his second steal of the season. The homer, 114 mile per hour exit velocity, the hardest hit by a left-handed batter this season. Thought that was awesome to see. Julio Rodriguez went 1-for-3 with a walk and his second steal. However, 2 more strikeouts brings him to a 52% strikeout rate on the season. Some early thoughts on those two, Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez.
I am a little concerned with the strikeouts. If they were making outs that weren't all strikeouts, it'd be different. Especially since we just went through this with Kelnick last year. But the performance Kelnick had with the sock and the shoe, with the loud home run, as you point out, Frank, I mean, that's a reminder of the upside that's there. And of course, the it's only a week rule still applies for them, too. It's a little harder to have faith when you haven't seen them succeed in at the major league level before, not for any real length of time anyway. But it's too early to consider dropping either. And, you know, hopefully this performance from Kelnick and frankly, Julio Rodriguez, the fact he already has 2 stolen bases. I mean, that was the most questionable part. Would he run at the major league level? And for somebody who's hardly gotten on base to have already 2 stolen bases, I think is very encouraging from that standpoint. But in the end, he's going to need to hit. Let's give it a few more weeks.
Yeah, I mentioned on last night's podcast, you weren't here, Scott, but Kyle Lewis is rehabbing and he's on his way back soon. And, you know, once he returns, this outfield gets a little bit more crowded. So by then, if these guys aren't hitting, then I think, you know, someone could find themselves on the outside looking in. It'll depend on who is performing better at that time. But, you know, now is the time. These guys have to show up, Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez. Let's get into week 3. I know it might sound weird for some people. If you played the long week 1, then this is technically week 2 for you. But based on the CBS default schedule, the short weekend was week 1. This past week was week 2. This upcoming week that starts on April 18th. Will be week 3. Scheduling to know. 12 teams have 7 games. 18 teams have 6 games. Obviously 0 there with 5 games. What I think I said teams. 12 teams have 7 games. 18 teams have 6 games. 0 teams have 5 games. You love to see it. a very even week in terms of scheduling. Scott, kick us off here with some two start pitchers that you are looking at for week three.
Well, as if we haven't brought his name up enough, Merrill Kelly is my favorite two-star pitcher who's rostered in less than 80% of leagues and therefore somebody you could potentially pick up. He's still only 52% rostered for as much as we've discussed him. And, you know, his latest outing, I was a little discouraged by it. He didn't get all the swinging strikes with the changeup that he got in his first start that he got in spring training. And it's still, you know, it's still more likely than not that he's kind of a fringe guy all year. But it's worth pointing out that start was against the Astros. He still had success. They're not a team that swings and misses much to begin with. So, you know, let's not bury him based on what was still a successful start. And his matchups this week are the Nationals and the Mets, two pretty good matchups. I also like Tristan McKenzie. He's a little more rostered, 71%. And of course, he's been very hit or miss since first getting promoted in 2020. But his last start was very much a hit, just Wednesday night. I don't know if it was a night, but on Wednesday. His matchups this week, White Sox at the Yankees. You know, iffy matchups, but there's a lot of upside there. And he's making two starts. Nick Lodolo at San Diego versus St. Louis. Did not look good in his major league debut, but to get an extra start in there might be worth taking a shot on the talent. Kind of a deep pick is Jordan Hicks. I'm not sure. It's technically going to be his first start of the season on Tuesday because they kept having to push it back for scheduling reasons, but he's in line for two starts beginning Tuesday at Miami, at Cincinnati. And he's transitioning to a starting role when he's been primarily a reliever in his major league career to this point. So I'm not sure he's going to be stretched out fully, but you know, we're getting pretty deep into the recommendations here. Josiah Gray versus Diamondbacks.
Oh, Scott, you're breaking up. You're breaking up, bud.
Man,
how you doing?
With my internet lately.
Are you back?
You got me?
I think so.
Okay.
All right. I think we're good now.
Sorry.
Sorry, man.
Sorry about that. There's no interruption on mine. Anyway. So yeah, I would say of those five names I rattled off, the two I might actually consider starting are Merrill Kelly and Tristan McKenzie, but Lodolo, Hicks, Josiah Gray, you could think about them if you're somebody who just wants as many starts as you can get.
I think Jordan Hicks, specifically in a points league too, which might sound weird, but you can throw him in your relief pitcher spot, and between those two starts, I think he'll give you enough length that would equal one start, if that makes sense. So, you know, maybe he goes like three innings in each of those. So that would be like what a normal pitcher would give you. So just something to keep in mind if you're looking for a SPARP in a points league. All right, Scott, how about some single start streamers that we are looking at? I see you have four names rostered in less than 75% of CBS leagues.
Yeah. So Matt Brash is my favorite sleeper overall for this upcoming week, one start or two. He was very impressive in his major league debut, threw a lot of strikes. And this week he gets the Royals. So very much like that. Andrew Heaney at the Padres, even though they just beat up on Charlie Morton and the Braves, I still think they're a middling lineup. And he showed a lot of swing and miss potential with that new sweeper in his first start. We'll see how Mitch Keller's start goes over this weekend. If it's unsuccessful, then maybe I'll take him out of the sleeper pitchers for the upcoming week. But at Milwaukee, that's who he lines up for. If he does look good over this weekend, I think he'll be somebody to consider for that matchup against the Brewers. And did you want me to mention Miles Michaelis as well at Miami? You know, it's kind of a boring pitcher, but good matchup, and he might go deep enough to get a win.
Yeah, more of a deeper league play, I would say, for Miles Michaelis. Mitch Keller, I think you said it right. We got to see something this weekend in order to trust him at Milwaukee. Their bats look like they woke up on Thursday against Adam Wainwright. Lots of hard hits off of him. A few near home runs as well. Like Christian Yelich hit one that was like off the wall, near home run. Yeah, so lots of hard hits.
Andrew McCutchen, too.
Yes.
They both hit it over 400 feet, I think.
Yeah,
they didn't go out.
Yeah, it was scary. So it looks like the Brewers lineup is starting to wake up. So that could be kind of scary there for Mitch Keller. I wanted to bring one up, Scott. This is purely in deeper leagues, but I like to look at the first game that the Rockies are out of Colorado. So they're playing six games from today, well, Thursday night through next week, six games in a row at Coors Field. And then their first game next week is in Detroit. And they're going up against Matt Manning. I know Matt Manning isn't great, but I feel like that hangover game, that first game out of Coors Field, is somewhere where you can really attack the Rockies. What do you think about Matt Manning in a deeper league?
I mean, look, when you get to the point that you're recommending Miles Michaelis, I don't think somebody like Matt Manning for that reason is off the table. But I do want to reiterate, as I maybe too often do with these sleeper pitcher and hitter recommendations, is like, I'd rather not have to resort to any of these guys, really. Like, I come up with a list of 10 to cover all the bases, but realistically, you know, usually my top 10 sleeper pitchers, it might be the top three that I'd consider starting in any of my leagues, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're getting pretty far down there with a Matt Manning type recommendation or even a Miles Michaelis recommendation.
Yeah, these are deeper leagues, probably 15 team mixed or NL only, AL
or
only,
or like that. Desperate situations, you know?
Yeah, that's what you want to use the sleepers for. It's, look, if you have stud pitchers on your team, then you're playing those guys.
Yeah.
Maybe you're looking for a two starter to mix in there, but for the most part, you're playing your studs early on, and these are mostly desperation calls. Like,
for the most part. Now my top two sleeper pitchers for this week are Matt Brash and Merrill Kelly. I've mentioned both of them already, so I'm not going to get into the why again, but like, I'd be fine starting Matt Brash or Merrill Kelly in basically any league. But yeah, you don't have to go too far. Like, there's a reason these guys are rostered in less than 80% of leagues. And it's because you'd rather not have to start them, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Let's move over to the hitter side of things. Scott, who are the names that you're looking at less than 70% rostered on CBS?
So boy, like, this is not a fun week to do sleeper pitchers and hitters. I guess that's why I'm apologizing for them, because the way every team's rotation lines up, this is a week where every team's best starters are going twice. So it makes it hard to find sleeper pitchers, because the ones getting the most starts are really good pitchers. And it makes it hard to find sleeper hitters, because hitters are generally going against really good pitchers. So don't love this group. My top two picks are Connor Joe and Randall Grichuk, who, you know, they were near the top in weeks one and two as well. People are probably tired of hearing about them, but they do remain rostered in few enough leagues that I can recommend them. The Rockies spend half a week at home and half a week against the Tigers rotation, Matt Manning included, which is not a very good rotation. So I think I can recommend them with some confidence. I like the Cubs matchups this week, so Ian Happ, I feel okay recommending him. Joshua Lowe of the Rays hasn't done much yet, but he's impacted the ball well. He's gotten on base with walks, and they've been playing him against both lefties and righties. So the matchups for him are pretty good. I believe the toughest pitcher the Rays face this upcoming week is Nate Eovaldi. And then Kyle Hendricks and Stroman are on there. But, you know, it's not like a lot of big bat missers where you worry about him just getting carved up. So I could see Lowe coming to life this week if you're in a five outfielder league. Seth Brown, I think, is the sneakiest play. He's only 14% rostered. The A's have the best matchups of any team this week. Seven games they're going against the Orioles and the Rangers. Brown's off to a good start. And they've only faced one lefty so far, the A's, but he started that game. So it seems like they're treating him as more or less an everyday player, which is a surprise, frankly. Also, Jorge Mateo, who's 19% rostered. And I like the Orioles matchups this week, seven games. He's been walking. He's been running when he's gotten on base. If steals don't matter in your league, I'm not sure you need to care that much about Jorge Mateo. But if you haven't if steals do matter and you haven't invested in him yet, I think this week is a good time to. I don't think he'll be 80% available forever.
All right. The best hitter matchups per Scott, and these are for the specific teams, the A's, the Twins, the Cubs, the Mariners, and the Orioles, the worst hitter matchups in week three, the Braves, the Dodgers, the Cardinals, the Mets, and the Milwaukee Brewers. Let's promote a few things. Fantasy Baseball Today is here to help you dominate your league all season long. But now you can represent your favorite podcast with official Fantasy Baseball Today gear only found on the CBS Sports Store. Discover t-shirts, mugs, sweatpants, laser-engraved pint glasses, hats, water bottles, and more to remind your buddies how you got the inside scoop to crush the competition. Right now, Fantasy Baseball Today listeners will get 20% off orders when they use this podcast exclusive code FANTASYBASEBALL20. During checkout. Again, that's Fantasy Baseball 20, and it's only available for our listeners. Head over to store.cbssports.com/collections/fantasybaseballtoday. That's a really long link. The link is in the podcast and YouTube description. So if you want to find it, you can look for it there. And again, use that code and you will get 20% off your order. And if you want to hear about the latest on top prospects in the game, listen to our Saturday episode of Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, our 5-minute podcast. Download and follow wherever you listen to this podcast. Every Saturday, that's going to be the plan moving forward. We'll talk about prospects on there. Make sure you go and check out Scott's prospect report live on the site as well. CBSSports.com/fantasy/baseball. Let's take a break. And when we return, news and notes here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, let's get into the news and notes. Per an article from Justin Toscano, who covers the Braves for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the plan is for Ronald Acuna to join AAA Gwinnett on April 26th for a rehab assignment that seems to be in line with his early May timeline. Within the article, they reference that if he looks really good, maybe he'll start a rehab assignment next week, but I think that April 26th timeline sounds a little bit more accurate for Ronald Acuna. Mackenzie Gore, he's here, Scott. He has been confirmed, as the starter on Friday against the Atlanta Braves. He is 61% rostered, so please check to see if he is available in your league. Again, that is Mackenzie Gore.
Everywhere.
Make sure you get him on your team. He is a must-add right now.
I would say beyond Jesus Luzardo and Tyler McGill, who are now around like 85% rostered in CBS. So, you know, it's too late for them. But Mackenzie Gore is the most exciting pickup of the year at starting pitcher so far after them. So I don't even care that much how the start goes. I mean, obviously he needs to stick around after it. But he was the gold standard of pitching prospects prior to his mechanical issues last year. And, you know, he showed up to camp looking like that guy again and looked like that in his first AAA start. So I think we should treat him that way.
All right. Well, Scott, that's why you're a professional, because we got an email from Ben and he asked, do I add Mackenzie Gore or Tyler McGill? So you would still go McGill there.
Yeah, I would still go McGill. But like who else would be in that discussion? Tristan McKenzie, maybe.
Merrill Kelly, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, but even he's only up to 52. I would like Andrew Heaney, I feel like, had an exciting first start, but he's not even up to 50 yet in terms of roster rate.
Matt Brash. I think Matt Brash is in that discussion.
Okay. Spot. Yeah, you need to, you should have Brash over McKenzie Core too. I forgot about him.
Yeah, look, it's a fun time for early in the season for some young, exciting starting pitchers. So Tyler McGill, McKenzie Gore, Matt Brash, those are the top three right now. Ben also said that Scott needs to grow a stash. Make it happen. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I would love for it to happen.
I have no interest in doing that. To be honest, it's too controversial. It's too controversial for a Friday. I feel, I'm going to do it anyway.
Do it.
I feel like most facial hair is grown ironically, and I keep waiting for that phenomenon to end. It's been going on for maybe like a decade now, but I still have a hard time taking it seriously. Like a well-manicured beard like yours, Frank, I'm not so much talking about that, but I'm talking about the standalone mustache or the very bushy beard. You know,
good thing Chris is in here.
You know, I understand certain faces look better with it. I get that, but it's so prevalent. And I don't know. I haven't totally, all these years into it, I haven't totally warmed up to it. Like, I feel like it started with Johnny Damon. remember when Johnny Damon grew that beard for the Red Sox and everyone was like, what's going on? He looks like a hobo. And then like you go back and you look at pictures of that beard now and it looks very tame by the standards of today.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
No, I think
that's my highly offensive rant for the day.
Hot take Friday from Scott White.
Yeah.
Johnny Damon. Yeah, he probably was one of the first. I know Jason Worth comes to mind where. Oh man, at some point I was like, how do they let this guy into the ballpark? But no, I mean, he had a big beard going on as well. Look, good thing you don't live here in the five boroughs, Scott, because you walk into Brooklyn and it's just, there are beards everywhere. And there's a lot going on there.
And you know what? Like, I'm not saying you can't have it if you want it. I get it. Like, it's, you know, you do you. It's a free country, all of that. But, like, don't pressure me into doing it. It's not my thing.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think it's just, it's like one of those phenomenons, right, Scott, where I think people just kind of wonder, like, how would Scott White look with a mustache?
I look with glasses now. How's that going?
Yeah, it looks all right.
I
think it suits you well.
Yeah. I don't like it.
All right.
I don't like it at all, but it's functional. It's not just there for looks.
All right, let's get back into it. Teoscar Hernandez placed on the IL with a left oblique strain. This is a big loss. He was being drafted in the third or fourth round in most leagues, so he's going to be out. I didn't see an official timetable, but obliques can be tricky. Raimel Tapia was batting fifth, and he started in right field on Thursday. He went 1-for-4. Not lots of excitement with Tapia. Maybe worth a look in deeper five outfielder leagues. Luis Castillo will throw a live bullpen on Friday. If all goes well, a rehab assignment could be up next. Javier Baez was scratched due to thumb soreness. Eloy Jimenez out of the lineup Thursday after fouling a ball off of his ankle the day before. Gene Segura was out of the lineup after getting hit by a pitch on his arm on Wednesday as well. Robbie Grossman has missed the last two games due to groin tightness. Bryce Elder, Scott, I need you to talk to me about Bryce Elder. I don't know much about this gentleman. He will pitch on Saturday for the Braves, which means Waskari Noah will lose his second start this weekend. So, unfortunately, if you started him as a two-star pitcher like I did in a few leagues, he will not get that second start. What do we need to know about Elder, Scott? I think he was like a borderline top 10 or top 15 prospect in the Braves organization.
Yeah, he's really unconventional. He pitches like somebody much older than he is. He has a lot of different pitches, gets good movement on them, locates them well, and got a lot of strikeouts in the minors last year, but he throws like 91. Like he doesn't have the fastball that most young pitchers have. And so I don't think there's a ton of upside there, despite the numbers being good. And you know, got good results in his first start. Maybe got a little gassed at the end, gave up a couple home runs in his final inning. But I'm not rushing out to add Elder.
He's 4% rostered. So, I mean, NL only. Are you going to put any bids in on him in your 15-team leagues this weekend?
No, So the start scheduled for Sunday?
Yeah. I guess for next week.
Let's see how that start goes.
Right.
But as things stand now, no, I would not be looking at NL only. Is a different story. Obviously, you pick them up in NL only, but a 15 team mixed. No, I would say that roster rate is maybe it could be as high as 10%, but we'll see how that second start goes. I have my doubts about Elder's upside.
I just refreshed some player news and I saw that Jonathan India left Thursday's game with right hamstring tightness. So hopefully not too bad for him. We need you, Jonathan India. Spencer Howard was placed on the IL with a cracked fingernail / blister issue. James Caprillion started a rehab assignment on Thursday. He's 17% rostered. He was like kind of useful at times last year, Scott. Any interest in James Caprillion in deeper leagues?
Not really. No, he was useful for a stretch, but it was short-lived and certainly not fresh off injury.
All right, let's get to the waiver wire interest-o-meter. We need more meters. 10 is a must-add player. 1, don't even bother. Jesus Sanchez, I know I brought him up the other day, Scott, but another good game. 2-for-4 with a triple, an RBI, a run scored. He is 68% rostered. The waiver wire interest-o-meter in Jesus Sanchez.
I would say probably about a 5. I mean, there's just no utility for him in a points league because the plate discipline's so bad, he'd need to have a ton of power. So it's pretty much limited to 5 outfielder category leagues, traditional roto leagues, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know if I went too high with the 5 there. We'll see how. I haven't figured out how to calibrate this meter you've just invented yet, but I'll say 5 for Jesus Sanchez and try to base my subsequent ratings on that.
All right. I mean, I think he might be valuable in 3 outfield category leagues if you need power.
I'm just not there yet with him. There are a lot of outfielders out there, and theoretically, a 3 outfielder categories league, assuming 12 teams, how many? 36 started, obviously. How many rostered? 45, maybe 46, maybe as many as 50. Is he in my top 50 yet? No, he's not. So that's where I'm at with, say, Jesus Sanchez.
And I love Jesus Sanchez. He's not inside my top 50 either. So I watch him very closely. I have him in the Scott White Dynasty League. And if nothing else, he's just a fun player to watch. He watches at bats and he's like wiggling his hips around. And when he's taking pitches, he's a unique player. He's a fun player. Let's stick with the Marlins here. I know that you talk about Anthony Bender a lot, Scott. He's only 41% rostered. He gave up 2 hits, but escaped with his second save in a 1-run game against the Philadelphia Phillies. Your waiver wire interest-o-meter in Anthony Bender?
10. Like, it's ridiculous how rostered Jake McGee is compared to Anthony Bender. Like, Bender's probably better. And he's a confirmed closer when McGee hasn't been used anything like a closer so far. And I'm picking on McGee here, but he's not the only example. They're relative to other relievers, Bender's roster rate is just outrageous to me. I guess people are still holding out hope. Dylan Floro comes, maybe not holding out hope, but they're halfway expecting Dylan Floro to come back and take that role. But it's not like Floro was a natural closer. He was the guy who backed into the role last year when they traded away their closer. And now that Don Mattingly has already declared Bender his go-to guy in the ninth, I'm not sure why he would revert to Floro. I understand I haven't exactly been the closer whisperer this year, so maybe I'll be dead wrong about this. But I feel like in my own relief pitcher rankings, I think I put him like 15th at relief pitcher. So definitely need to pick up Bender anywhere. Anywhere saves are valuable.
Scott, I don't know that a closer whisperer exists because it is just so tough, especially this time of year, trying to figure out what's going on. I pulled up Jake McGee's player page just to see how old he was, 35 years old. I thought, maybe at some point in life, he like stole Scott's lunch money or something, because Scott, you just really do not like Jake McGee, man. Every day, something to say about Jake McGee.
Well, it's just because people bought in so hard to this little comment from Gabe Kapler.
I was one of them. I got Kapler.
And like, come on, guys. You know better than this. It's interesting. You know the baseball sim out of the park?
Yes.
It's a great baseball sim on the PC. Well, as long as like, it feel like everything's 10 years ago for me, but like 10 years ago, I used to play it like all day. And I had a Pirates franchise going. And Jake McGee was just this minor leaguer for the Rays at the time. And, you know, I was building up the Pirates. So I traded for a bunch of prospects from all these different teams. Jake McGee ended up becoming my ace. That's how the sim developed them into. So I have a soft spot for Jake McGee, actually, just to share with you some of my sim exploits. I'm sure it's very interesting.
All right. I'll take your word for it. But I have Jake McGee on my main event team again, and a team that I have three what I thought were closers coming in, and I have zero saves. So there you go, baseball. JP Crawford went 2-for-5 with his first steal, and he's off to a nice start. He's 10-for-24. He has three doubles, just one strikeout. He's 42% rostered. Scott, your waiver wire interest-o-meter in JP Crawford.
One. No, there's nothing to see here.
All right, fair enough. Ronzi Contreras, I wanted to ask you about. He came in relief on Thursday for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's one of the top pitching prospects in their organization. Three shutout, one hit, one walk, five strikeouts, nine swinging strikes on 46 pitches, and he averaged 97 miles per hour on the fastball. Spin rate on his curveball, 2,853 RPM. That is elite. 14% rostered. Scott, what is your waiver wire interest-o-meter in Ronzi Contreras?
So I guess he's in the same spot Spencer Strider's in, and Aaron Ashby was in. Now it sounds like Ashby's at least getting one turn in the rotation upcoming for the Brewers. I don't know how long they'll go six-man. Maybe he'll end up bumping somebody out completely. But it's more of a stash now for Contreras. I think maybe you could use him in deeper categories leagues as just kind of a cheap strikeouts guy. So I'll call my interest level in him like a 4 for the purposes of this exercise. But yeah, whenever he does enter the rotation for the Pirates, he's going to be pretty interesting.
All right, in deeper leagues, let's get through these a little bit quicker. Aroldis Chapman enters in a three-run game. He walks the bases loaded, no outs. And then I think Michael King came in to close the game out. Any interest in stashing Jonathan Loaisiga and or Chad Green?
Very little. And this was Chapman's first shaky outing of the season, and basically every closer has had one by now.
Yep. This is one where I have to remind myself to like take it easy, Scott. I mean, more so as a fan, because I'm just like done with Aroldis Chapman. I'm done with him. Raver San Martin came in relief. He was the long reliever, the follower against the Dodgers. Five shutout, two hits, zero walks, two strikeouts. In deeper leagues, any interest?
I would say minimal interest.
All right. The last one on this list, Dan Vogelbach, 4-for-5 with his first homer. And he, as of now, strong side of the platoon. He's 2% rostered.
I've always kind of liked Daniel Vogelbach against my better judgment. But the Pirates are going to give him a lot of chances. So that's, you know, this may be his best opportunity ever to break in and emerge as something. Four hit games, not really moving the needle for me, but we'll keep an eye on him.
All right. Ace is going to ace. Let's take a look at a few aces from Thursday. Sandy Alcantara, a nice bounce back here. 6 1/3, one run, five strikeouts. He had 19 swinging strikes on 94 pitches. Kevin Gausman, very strong outing at the Yankees. 5 2/3, two runs, nine strikeouts, 21 swinging strikes. And he induced one of the worst swings I've ever seen in my life on Giancarlo Stanton. Go check out my Twitter or Pitching Ninja, because he tweeted it out. It was bad. And then Joe Musgrove just put on a clinic against the Braves. Sorry, Scott. 6 2/3 shutout with six strikeouts. Anything that you notice here, Scott, on Sandy Gausman? What? Why did I say his name like that? Sandy Gausman and Joe Musgrove.
Yeah, that's the right way to say it. You're right. Gausman, 21 swinging strikes and specifically 13 on just 24 splitters. So
nasty.
I think he's going to be fine. I know we're a little worried, kind of a bumpy second half, and now he's going to Toronto. Again, it's only 1 week, so things could change, but you can feel pretty comfortable with Gausman right now, I should say. Musgrove, the velocity was down and the spin was down quite a bit. Obviously, it didn't affect the results in this start, but I would add him to the list of high-end pitchers who are at least a little concerning first time through. You know, I'm not looking to dump him or anything. I say first time through. This is second start, obviously. But yeah, I definitely want to keep an eye on those velocities and spin rates in the starts ahead.
All right. For Kevin Gausman, I wanted to add the slider velo was up 2 miles per hour. So that is a good velocity reading. We haven't gotten a lot of those so far. So just more greatness from Kevin Gausman. Not nearly an ace count outcome from these two, Scott, but they were solid. Brandon Woodruff, he needed a bounce back performance. 5 shutout, 3 hits, 1 walk, only 2 strikeouts in this one. And then Logan Gilbert, solid on the road at the White Sox. 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 unearned run, 4 strikeouts, 2 walks. Anything on Woodruff and or Logan Gilbert?
So Woodruff, I understand he didn't get a lot of strikeouts. 12 swinging strikes on 89 pitches. That's whatever. I don't think there's anything to worry about here. Bad spring, bad first start. This start, you know, a little underwhelming with the strikeouts. But remember in that first start, he was hardly throwing his secondaries at all. He threw like 70% fastballs. It was 53% fastballs this time, combined 4-seamer and 2-seamer, which is more in line with what he was doing last year. So I think those secondaries are starting to come around after the abbreviated spring training. And the stuff looks fine in terms of velocity. I think Woodruff's going to be absolutely fine.
All right, we got an email from Scott earlier in the day. Not Scott White. Grade the trade. Head-to-head categories with expanded rosters. Only 8 teams in this league. The pitching categories are wins plus quality starts, innings, strikeouts, ERA, whip, saves plus holds. I gave Joe Musgrove and Logan Gilbert for Brandon Woodruff and Aaron Ashby in an 8-team league.
Grade a league it. That shallow, just sell out for the best player, which is Woodruff. So I would say that's a B plus. I mean, you gave up 2 pretty good pitchers, and in like a 12 team league, I might hesitate to do it. But for an 8-team league, yeah, you just got to go for the best you can get.
He does add that there's expanded rosters, so I wonder if maybe it plays like a 10 or 12 team league based on that. Woodruff is far and away the best player in this deal. Then it's Musgrove, then it's Gilbert, then it's Ashby after those guys. I think in a vacuum, I think this is a very fair trade, Scott. I would give it a C, but because it's a shallower league, I'll give you the slight advantage, like a C plus or B minus for me. Let's talk about some hitter standouts from Thursday. Brandon Lau, 2-for-4 with his 3rd home run. This one was off of a lefty, and Brandon Lau is off to a very nice start. He's batting .296, just 5 strikeouts in 7 games. Jesse Winker stand out for the wrong reasons, 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. He is 3-for-22. Does have 8 walks, so the OBP is there right now. All 3 of his hits are singles. However, the underlying Statcast metrics are all great right now for Jesse Winker. 92 mile per hour exit velocity, 317 XBA, 558 X slug. So if you have Winker, don't do anything rash yet. It seems like better days are coming for him. Christian Yelich went 1-for-4 with a double. We mentioned nearly hit a home run in this game. He had 3 hard hit balls, and he's looked good so far, Scott. I think we were maybe talking off the podcast, before the podcast the other day, and you and Chris were talking about how you've been impressed by Christian Yelich thus far.
Yeah, I can't remember what Chris shared with us. Something like he had the best hard hit rate of the year so far or something like that. And he doesn't have a home run yet, Christian Yelich, but he's showing a good eye. He's making elite contact. And his launch angle's better than it was last year. It's not where it was at his peak, but it's good enough to suggest that if he keeps it going, obviously. And again, we're talking very little data, but encouraging signs from a player who I know a lot of people were worried about coming into the year, rightfully so. It hasn't translated to big results yet, but the underlying numbers say it's coming.
All right, we can't talk about Yelich without, of course, talking about Cody Bellinger. Just checked in on the Dodger game. He's 2-for-3 with a walk. Both of his hits are singles. He also stole another base. So he's now up to 3 steals. He hit his first home run on Wednesday, and now he's batting .286. So I'm not saying Cody Bellinger is back, but this is what we needed to see. We need to see some signs of life. And, you know, the past 3 or 4 games, Cody Bellinger has looked a lot better. So Credit to him. Let's see if he can keep it up.
If nothing else, the willingness to run is very encouraging. It's obviously fast enough to do it, but I don't think anybody was necessarily counting on him for stolen bases, even if he did bounce back, because, you know, he's been kind of Manny Machado-like as far as those go, where you're never sure if they're going to be there from 1 year to the next. By the way, Manny Machado up to 3 stolen bases now, too.
Yeah. Tony Santian came in the game in the bottom of the 8th inning, and he got crushed. 2 hits, 3 earned runs, gave up a 3-run homer to Will Smith. Scott, if you added Tony Santian, or if anyone added Tony Santian last weekend, you feel all right dropping him, right?
I mean, saves plus holds leagues, maybe not, but there aren't many of those. So, sure. I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to be even the second choice for saves once Lucas Sims gets back.
I made such a bad move. We were talking before, Scott, and I am just beating myself up for this, man. In a deeper league, I dropped Michael Givens, who picked up the save on Thursday for Tony Santian, and it feels awful. When you make like a bad closer decision, it just feels so, so bad. Tommy Edman, let's get back.
I mean, not that Michael Givens, I think, is now replacing David Robertson as the Cubs closer, but that situation is not crystal clear, if nothing else.
Yeah. Let's get back into the hitters. Tommy Edman, 1-for-2 with his second home run. He's off to a great start. He's batting .400 with just 2 strikeouts in 5 games. Frankie, how many? 2 hits is back. All he needed was Coors Field. 2 hits in this game. He hit his first home run of the season. 87% rostered. That actually kind of surprised me. So people are in on Frankie 2 hits. Maybe Vlad Jr. felt the effects of that finger injury today. Remember, he got stepped on by Aaron Hicks when he was covering first base yesterday. Still hit the 3 home runs in that game. But then today, he goes 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts. So, all right, he's all right. He's allowed to do that after 3 home runs. Corey Seager, 2-for-4 with his first Rangers home run. He is batting .346 early on. And a few stolen bases I wanted to mention. JT Realmuto, 4-for-4 with his first steal. Jace Peterson now has 2 steals for those who play in deeper leagues. Colton Wong went 2-for-4 with his first steal. Ke'Bryan Hayes, true story. Scott wanted to talk about Ke'Bryan Hayes as his oh my goodness gracious player because he stole a base. That's the reason.
There wasn't a lot of oh my goodness gracious today, so I was struggling to come up with one.
Yeah.
So that's his third as well, right?
I think it's his second, but I will confirm that once again right now.
Yeah, you're right. It's his second.
Yeah. No, that's good. I mean, if you could get 10 to 15 steals out of a third baseman, those are out of position steals. Those are very valuable.
Well, he's on pace for well more than that, because I don't know if you heard, Frank. It's only been a week. He's on pace for like 40 steals.
Let's go. Give us 40 steals. We'll take it. And by us, I mean, I have like 1 share of Ke'Bryan Hayes, so not much.
He's hitting the ball hard too, but a little too much on the ground still. Jury's still out on what kind of player Hayes is going to be, I'd say.
Yep. Adalberto Mondesi, 0-for-3 with a walk, but he picked up his first 2 steals of the season. Whit Merrifield went 1-for-5. He picked up his 3rd steal. Austin Nola stole a base as part of a double steal with Manny Machado. And then Yankees backup catcher Jose Trevino stole a base. He now has more steals than Bo Bichette, Jazz Chisholm, and Tim Anderson. Because baseball, that's why. The call to the bullpen for the Oakland A's, Lou Trevino pitched 3 of the last 4 games, so he was not available on Thursday. A gentleman named Danny Jimenez picked up the save there. So just a name to watch if anything happens to Trevino or if he's traded at some point. For the Mariners, Drew Steckenrider pitched in the 7th inning, up 3-1. He faced the 6, 7, and 8 in the lineup. Diego Castillo was used in the 8th. At that time, the score was 5-1. And then Paul Sewald was used in the 9th. Scott, would you be okay dropping Drew Steckenrider if you have him in deeper leagues? Would you drop him for the Red Sox guys, for example, like Hansel Robles or Jake Diekman?
Look, it's 2 versus 3.
Right.
So, well, I don't know. I don't know that we can completely rule out Mount Barnes for the Red Sox. I hate closer situations like this. I mean, the Mariners never really settled on anybody last year, at least after they traded Kendall Graveman. So, I don't know. I think if saves are really hard to find in your league, you probably need to hold on to Steckenrider.
I can always tell when you're stressed out, Scott, because you start rubbing your head. And
well, it's just like, it's trying to...
You need the stress ball.
Words.
Where's the stress ball?
Into words what really can only be known by experience, you know?
Mm-hmm. Where's the stress ball, Scott?
I don't know. I lost it. The kid probably ran off with it.
Yeah. For the Detroit Tigers, Gregory Soto was in the ninth inning with a 2-run lead. He converted his second save of the season. Michael Fulmer once again pitched in the eighth. And we mentioned for the Cubs, Michael Givens picked up a save with a 3-run lead. David Robertson technically should have been available. He pitched last on Tuesday, April 12th. He did pitch, no, not even back-to-back days. It was, he pitched April 10th before that. So it seems like Robertson should have been available, but they still went to Michael Givens, so.
Right. It was a 3-run lead. So even though it was a save situation, they may not have viewed it as the most high leverage situation. I mean, that's the thing. How many closers are they really? Most bullpens probably just have more of a leverage guy. That usually ends up getting their saves, but not with the same dedication, consistency that we think of a true closer getting, you know?
I have a theory, Scott. Michael Givens has pitched in Colorado before for the Rockies. They were in Colorado for this game. That's why they used him. He knows how to pitch there.
Yeah.
I just completely made that up. I don't know if it's true, but
is it a conspiracy theory or is it just a theory?
That one, that's a conspiracy theory. Yeah. We can file that under the Luis Severino Cutter conspiracy theories on today's podcast. To stream or not to stream. Oh, I just realized, Scott, we didn't give out a Fortune Favors the Brave 2-star pitcher of the week for next week.
Is that something we have to do?
Scott, you're breaking up again.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, there you go. You're back. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's my internet.
I don't know either. I forgot to pay my cable bill.
Who is the scariest pitcher on this list? You know, Josiah Gray is pretty scary. I mean, he had
the home runs.
Yeah. He had a great start recently against the Braves, but he is someone that can be very hit or miss. So I think
you're going to go with him.
I'm going to go with Josiah Gray. Who are you going to go
with? I'm going to go with Nick Lodolo.
Okay.
I don't really want to start Nick Lodolo after that debut, but yeah, he's making 2 starts and has a lot of upside. So
yeah,
that's my fortune favor. I think it should be Fortune Favors the Bold, Frank.
Well,
not Brave.
All right. You'll do Bold. I'll do Brave. So let's wrap up here with our to stream or not to stream for the weekend for Friday. Let's start with Mitch Keller versus the Washington Nationals. Eric Fetty is at the Pirates. Zach Eflin at the Marlins. Drew Rasmussen at the White Sox. Reed Detmers at the Rangers. Brad Keller versus the Tigers. Kyle Wright at the Padres. And then Mackenzie Gore making his debut against the Braves.
You know, I don't think Gore's a must start in his debut, but he's probably my favorite of this group. I don't mind Kyle Wright or Mitch Keller, or Brad Keller, or Reed Detmers, or Drew Rasmussen, or Zach Eflin. I think they're all usable. The only one who isn't is Eric Fetty. Get that out of here.
Yeah. I think I might put Zach Eflin at the top of the list.
Yeah. My eyes went there kind of late, but
yep.
No, I want to put him ahead of Gore, but I might put him second behind Gore with that matchup at Miami. Yeah, that's fair.
Let's go to Saturday. Jameson Taillon at the Orioles. Nick Martinez versus the Braves. Josh Rogers at the Pirates. Adrian Hauser versus the Cardinals. Tommy Hearn versus the Angels. And then Paul Blackburn at the Blue Jays. I was kind of struggling to find names here, so.
Yeah, Jameson Taillon at Baltimore, obviously a really good matchup. And he got all those swinging strikes in his first start of the season. I don't know where those were last year. A little skeptical of it, but with that matchup, I think you could roll the dice. If you need a second one, Adrian Hauser versus the Cardinals would be my pick. No. They won it. I'm sorry. Nick Martinez versus the Braves would be my second pick. And I actually am starting to like him quite a bit.
Okay.
So Adrian Hauser third.
I would like to apologize to Taylor Hearn because I called him Tommy Hearn. I guess I had a legendary boxer Tommy Hearns in my head there. Taylor Hearn, by the way, if you haven't seen it, he had an awesome like press conference where his sister was asking the questions. I don't know if she's like a reporter or if she was just there, but it was awesome. It was like a really like wholesome response. So if anyone hasn't seen it, go check it out. Again, that is Taylor Hearn with the Texas Rangers. For Sunday, Nestor Cortes at the Baltimore Orioles, Eliezer Hernandez versus the Phillies, Aaron Ashby versus the Cardinals, Carlos Hernandez versus the Tigers, and Jose Quintana versus the Nationals.
So as good as Nestor Cortes looked against the Blue Jays, I'm happy to start him at Baltimore. I like the potential of Aaron Ashby, obviously. I'm not sure he's going to be ready to go the five innings needed to get a win. But still, he'd be my second choice of this group.
All right, we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye. Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.